Hold your papers up high. Forget all your worries. We're troubled poets can't die. They're the meat of the story.
Good morning and welcome to Voices in the Valley, where we celebrate the creative spirit and nurture the art of storytelling. My name is Steph, and I'm here with Dee again. Good morning, Dee.
Good morning.
Aren't you glad you're my co-host?
Oh, yes.
It's good to have you
always
here. Well, it's April.
Unbelievable.
The sky is blue.
Thank God.
It's beautiful out. The birds are singing. But April is all about the big read in the St. Croix Valley. The National Endowment for the Arts actually has 77 cities all over the nation that do the big read at once. And we were fortunate enough, thanks to ArtReach St. Croix, that we were able to do a big read event here in the St. Croix River Valley. Yes, it's very fun. But we also have a really, really unique and interesting event taking place thanks to this. And that is, there is an exhibit at ArtReach opening up called Know My Story. It's an exhibition of art created by inmates from the Minnesota Correctional Facility, and it's a super cool project that originated between the partnership between ArtReach St. Croix and the Minnesota Correctional Facility. Yeah, it's very cool. And today, we have Jeff Guzzi here from the Minnesota Correctional Facility to tell us more about it. So welcome, Jeff.
Thank you.
So tell me about Know My Story. What's that all about?
Well, Know My Story, I guess it was something that my ad director, Pat Pavlock, had kind of came to me with that she wanted to do. And the title Know My Story was selected from what the writers put in as these six-word memoirs, they call them.
Six words?
Yes.
So, your entire life in six words.
Right.
Okay, Dina.
I can't even begin.
Yeah. I think that's more than six
words.
There you
go.
Yes, and the people at ArtReach decided on the ones that we gave them, which are going to be displayed at the gallery as well. They picked one of the six-word memoirs and took three words out of it. I think the whole memoir was "If Only You Knew My Story," and they decided to use the portion of that.
Know My Story. That's really cool.
Uh-huh. Some of the artwork is related to the Maltese Falcon. Mm-hmm. Some of the guys use that as inspiration, so it connects that way. I think, the prison is part of the community, and through art and being able to display art and writing this way, it's one of the few ways they have to connect and maybe communicate some ideas and, to the community.
Do you think the inmates involved are excited that their work is on display at ArtReach?
They do. I think they're very excited to see pictures of it.
Yeah.
If we,
because they probably can't go.
Right. They would like to.
I'm sure.
Field trip is not part of the equation here.
I suppose not.
No, but we will be able to show them pictures and give them an idea. And I think it'll be pretty thrilling to see everything put together.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm just going to summarize that Know My Story is an exhibition at ArtReach St. Croix that will be opening this weekend and going throughout the Big Read event schedule in April. And it invites the community to see work created by inmates through the art and creative writing classes that they take at the Minnesota Correctional Facility. Know My Story features two- and three-dimensional artwork created through the Fine Art and Career Technical Educational Programs. That's you, Jeff!
That's right.
That's right. And also includes, as you mentioned, six-word memoirs written by members of the creative writing class. That's really an amazing thing.
Yes.
Do you have a couple of pieces that are your favorite?
Well, it was very difficult to pick just a couple, but
let me rephrase the question. Not your favorites, okay? Scratch that, everybody out there. So, if anyone who's done anything is listening, this is not about favorite.
Right.
Can you just tell me about three that come to mind?
Okay. Well, I actually put down four.
Well, that's even better.
The first one that really stood out, and it was no question I was going to talk about it, is it's called RIP, which normally stands for Rest in Peace, but in this case, it's Rotten Prison. It depicts a jail cell, which is also basically a grave. It's underground. The tombstone is above the jail cell. Somebody's written in graffiti, rotten prison, over the RIP part. And there's a person tossing a rose into the cell or grave as they turn and walk away. And that represents friends and family that oftentimes when someone goes to prison, kind of turns their back on the people that are incarcerated, and they kind of feel, you know, somewhat of that they're left to rot. And that's what he's trying to depict in this case.
It sounds really powerful.
It is, yeah. Another one that's a lot more lighthearted is called Black Sheep. And this one, normally you would see a black sheep as the one standing out. In this case, there are three black sheep and one white sheep. While the black sheep are facing towards you, the white sheep is facing away, so its rear end is facing towards you. And so in this case, the white sheep happens to be the unique one, and it has to do with, you know, a lighthearted way to look at who really is the black sheep. Another one is called Tattooed Girl, and that was inspired by the book and the Maltese Falcon and the time period. It's kind of a poster-style painting. You might see it at a carnival representing one of the carnival acts, a tattooed lady, kind of cartoonish. And the final one was called Lady and the Cat.
Instead of Lady and the Tramp, it's right. Lady and the Cat.
Exactly. And in this case, it's a graphite drawing, fairly large. It's very emotional, for me anyway, when I look at it. It represents a woman lying in bed who's pregnant, obviously, and there's a cat sitting on the bed with her, just staring at her as she sleeps. You know, to me, it represents kind of a peaceful feeling and just comfort. To him, it represented something a little different. He said that it made him happy that the cat and the woman were both very happy. To be able to see that was something out of his grasp, and that was his way to be able to grasp it, I guess.
Those all sound amazing. Yes, very moving. And Know My Story, all of these beautiful pieces that you've talked about, can be seen at ArtReach St. Croix in Stillwater on 4th Street. It's a really cute little blue Victorian right across from the Stillwater Public Library. You can't miss it if you go to the Stillwater Public Library. And they are on view, all this artwork is on view from March 30th through May 13th at the ArtReach St. Croix Galleries. The gallery hours are Wednesdays through Fridays, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., and Saturdays, 12 to 4, and admission is free. Jeff, thank you so much for coming on Voices in the Valley and sharing about this. It's time for our mid-program highlight. In the spirit of the Big Read, the Shire's Middle School Audio Drama Team has created an original radio play as a part of a podcast called Shush, called Don't Whine Over Lost Robots. This weekly series features the adventures of Detective Samantha Shovel and her friends. Today, episode 2. Listen in as Samantha and crew attempt to find and save a vitally important robot-human hybrid named Roman.
Oh, Trowel, this is really bad. Truly problematic. Jamie Link, dead. Roman, gone. Hobot, sick with the virus. I need some coffee.
That's Samantha Shovel, Private Eye. I'm Trowel, a cat. But I want to be a dog. Poof! It's the morning after Jamie Link's spectacular car crash that killed him and his malfunctioning human-robot hybrid driver. Samantha's in her office trying to figure it all out. As you know, unless you're ridiculously new to our situation, Roman, a human-robot hybrid, is also reported missing by the titan of human-hybrid manufacturing, Alexander Axton. Now, Roman is no ordinary robot. Despite its questionable power source, it's far more advanced than your everyday hybrid. Roman contains the code to fix the virus, causing Hobot and human-robot hybrids everywhere to malfunction.
Sorry, I'm late. Boss.
That's Peter Pitchfork, Samantha's worthless partner.
Peter, thank goodness. There's no time to waste. We have to figure this out.
Yeah. Of course. Oh, aren't you a cute little kitty, eh?
You asked for it.
Trowel, bad kitten!
He did ask for it. I've never been fond of Peter. he refuses to acknowledge I'm a dog.
Good morning. Salt and you at pepper in your coffee?
Oh, Hobot, go back to your charger. You're still not feeling well. We have to find Roman as soon as possible. But where do we start?
There's a hub.
With coffee?
With Harley. Let's head over to his lab. I don't care what Alexander Axton says. Dr. Hammer should know Roman is missing.
Dr. Harley Hammer's lab? This should be interesting.
Hello? Oh, for Pete's sake.
That's me, and yes, I'm okay.
No, not your sake. I mean, never mind. What are you here for? I'm busy working on my inventions.
Well, it's sort of hard to say, but well, Roman...
Dr. Hammer, Roman's missing.
What? This can't be. Do you know how important Roman is? He may be one of the best inventions of the century, and you're telling me he's lost. He's carrying the code that will cure the virus medicine and the human-robot hybrids, and you're telling me he's missing.
If he's not here with you, then yes. We need to ask you a few questions. Peter?
Huh? Oh, right. Okay. What is your connection to Raymon?
I invented him, and his name is Ro-Man.
Sorry. I knew that. Just nervous.
You know, robot plus man. Get it? Are you sure he's missing? He has a much more complex mapping system than most people.
Alexander Axton reported his disappearance yesterday.
That's when I dropped him off. Roman needed a spare part to fix a fluid leak in a hydrating oil bath. What are you doing here? You should be looking for him.
That's why we came to you.
What would I know? Until you have some actually useful information in finding Roman, don't come back here. Ugh, this is so upsetting. I can feel myself losing IQ points.
Wait!
Ow, my foot.
Do you want to see your robot again or not?
Okay, fine.
Then let's talk about this leak.
Unlike the complexity of the system I created, the leak is simple for Alexander to repair. It just needs the right part.
Downloading illegal copy of The Hobbit from Violent Netflix 42.
Hobot, cancel download!
Actually, I've been wanting to see that. It's one of the classics of the 21st century.
Either Hobot is a cyber criminal, or you have a glitched up robot sick with the virus. Something tells me it's the latter.
Yes, actually, I was wanting to ask you about that.
Boring. I'm getting out of here. Nothing like walking down dark and mysterious alleyways. You never know what could be down one of these. They can lead to adventure, which is the exact kind of experience I'll need to become the world's first dog private eye. Hey, is that Ruby Ratchet? Ruby is a local socialite. She used to be engaged to marry Frank Foreman, who also produces human-robot hybrids and is Alexander's competition. What is she doing outside the Big Cheese Bistro? Wait, she's talking to someone. This is very suspicious. Shush!
Do you really think so? Ugh, the oil was so messy.
I know this is going to work, and once we got all the little details in order, our plan will be complete. They'll be following that fake fluid trail I've laid for days without suspecting a thing.
That's terribly nefarious to lay a false trail that leads them to the lava mite. I hear there are tons of magmas.
They live to kill and kill to live.
And don't forget the electromagnetic clouds.
Zap! Oh, no.
What?
I forgot to tell Samantha about the oil path.
What? Seriously?
Yeah, I got distracted by the success of Jamie Link's death.
Pathetic.
What now?
I'll call Peter. It will be super easy to convince him to convince Samantha to follow it.
It sure was easy to fool her into thinking Roman had been kidnapped by somebody other than us.
I can see the headline now. Private Eye and partner found dead at Lava Mite. It'll be like when we took care of that Jamie Link guy, right?
Yeah, and once that virus eliminates all the hybrid, Foreman and Link will go bankrupt. Axton Industries released the new supermodel, and I'll be rich.
Hey, this isn't about you getting rich. I thought the purpose of the virus was to get rid of the hybrids, not make new ones.
Oh, no, not the father's speech.
My father was a heart surgeon.
Drat, do we have to hear about this again?
He trained all his life to become a surgeon.
Here we go.
He did good in school. He took every medical class in his college, but then...
Dr. Hammer invented a hybrid advanced enough to surgery.
And my father lost his job to a hybrid, and then... man who died of a broken heart.
Well,
I cancel my marriage to Frank over this. I don't want either one of you making any more human-robot hybrids. Let them all die.
What if I disable my surgeon line of robots from doing heart surgery?
You better. And where is Roman anyway?
Oh yes, he's in my mansion. In my bedroom closet. He's safe. For now. Until we want to destroy him. Nothing a little acid can't get rid of when we're ready.
Is your private jet on standby?
My dear, all I have to do is snap my fingers and...
Okay, I get it.
In the meantime, you make sure Scooby and the gang are gone.
Okay, got it.
Ready for a nice piece of raw beef?
I prefer my hamburgers charred. Yes. Oh no, I need to warn Sam. Whoa, did you hear that?
It's fine, it's just an alley cat. Even if it was out of place, it's not like it could do anything against us except meow harshly. See?
Ridiculous human.
Do you know what's wrong with him?
Oh man, Samantha and Dr. Hammer are still talking about this sick hybrid? I gotta get their attention.
Oh, hi, Trowel. Good kitty. You want to scratch behind your ears?
Well, I suppose this could wait.
The technology was designed so that human-robot hybrids can't break the law, not even under orders. Given Hobart's sudden fondness for pirated movies, I believe it must be the virus.
But can you fix it?
A little to the right, further down. Scratch right there. Yeah, right there.
The complexity of this generation's robots is its downfall. Robots have a security code to enter its data frame, where viruses usually harbor. Because the code is so complex, the virus tricks the robot into using a fake code. Sadly, the only way to get to the virus inside of the data frame is a specific code. The code I saved in Roman. If we just hacked the system again like the virus did, it would only make things worse. I'm sorry to say, but without the code carried by Roman, it is impossible to save Hobart.
English, please?
Ridiculous, Peter. Weren't you listening?
You can't save Hobart without the antivirus code held by Roman.
And if we don't find Roman and we don't have the code, then what happens with the virus?
The robots will all shut down and go boom.
Oh no.
You better find Roman.
Oh yes. Wait, that's my phone.
Peter always seems surprised when he gets a call.
Hello? Hi, Ruby. Yes, we were just talking about Roman. Wait, you have a clue? Here, let me put you on speakerphone.
Oh, okay. Who's all there?
Samantha, Harley, and me.
Perfect. I stopped by Axton Industries, and Alexander and I discovered the duct tape from Roman's oil leak came off. He left a trail of oil out of the service center.
You think Alexander could have told me that when we questioned him? Maybe he would have, if not for the car crash. What's wrong with the cat?
Trowel, calm down. I can't hear.
What's that racket? That's better. It's vitally important for you to head out to find Roman. The trail appears to head out to the Lavamite.
Not the Lavamite. I suggest we don't go because, you know, certain death.
Peter Pitchfork, for shame. Just because the place is a combination of lava and dynamite, that's no reason not to take heroic measures.
But the magmas!
What are magmas but huge, horrible lava creatures in all different shapes and sizes, making all kind of heinous, crazy noises. Mindless beings that feed off of... Oh, I've said too much.
Oop. I don't want to go.
Finally, good sense.
But we have to go!
Yes, Samantha, that's right. You have to go. Alexander, the plan is a success.
Why, of course it is. I thought of it.
Shush.
Bye, Ruby. Let's grab Hobart and go. Bye, Dr. Hammer.
Good luck, good day, and go find my woman. Now get that weird-sounding creature out of here.
Wine Over Missing Robots, Season 1 of Shush, was written and performed by students ages 10 to 14 from the St. Croix Valley. Our writing and acting team included...
Gigi as Trowel.
Finn as Alexander.
Lily as Samantha Shovel. Parker as Peter Pitchfork.
Summer Day as Hobart and Jamie Link. And Mitch as Roboride.
Romy as Ruby Ratchet.
Sam as Dr. Holy Hammer and Roman.
Liam as Frank.
Thanks to the St. Croix Jazz Orchestra for sharing their music with us. This entire endeavor was made possible by a grant from the National Endowment for the Arts, coordinated by ArtReach St. Croix for the NEA Big Read, a program of the National Endowment for the Arts in partnership with Arts Midwest. Don't Whine Over Missing Robots is a production of the Shire Literary Center under its nonprofit Parent Story Arc. For more information on the Shire's audio drama team experience, including details about our student-produced sci-fi podcast series Hush, contact executive producer Stephanie Atkins at steph@theshireonline.com.
Anyone want chips?
Life was simpler back in the day. The pace was slower, and the food more genuine somehow. It's still that way at Wayback Burgers. We use only fresh, authentic ingredients. Our delicious, juicy burgers are made to order and cooked to perfection. And our thick, creamy milkshakes are hand-dipped with real ice cream, the old-fashioned way. With Wayback's relaxing atmosphere and great food, things are as they were, only better. Taste freshness, America. Wayback Burgers.
My dad says I'm his pride and joy.
My mommy says I was her big surprise.
My mom says I'm her best helper.
I'm adopted. My dad says I was a gift.
That's right, kids. Each of you are a miracle and a blessing from God. Hello, my name is Angie. I work with Pro-Life Across America, the billboard people. If you know someone who is pregnant and in need of confidential counseling, including alternatives to abortion or post-abortion assistance, please call Pro-Life Across America at 1-800-366-7773 or check us out online at prolifeacrossamerica.org. Pro-Life Across America is educational, non-political, and tax-deductible. Please help support our life-saving outreach.
A baby child is being 18 days from conception.
Pro-Life Across America, the billboard people.
We've been family-owned since 1922, and we still believe that it all starts with you.
Find your bonus tag at Stillwater Motors. Hurry in and save up to $11,000 on new 2017 Chevy 1500 Silverado Crew Cabs. Find new roads with your next vehicle from Stillwater Motors. Redunds family owned since 1922. Call 651-HEY-CHEV or go to stillwatermotors.com.
Stillwater Motors, good people to know.
This is Steph here on Voices in the Valley, and in honor of the NEA Big Read presented by ArtReach St. Croix and programming partners. During the month of April, we are dedicating the second half of our show to the Maltese Falcon's audio guide, produced by the National Endowment for the Arts. If you are just tuning in, the NEA Big Read in the St. Croix Valley is one book, one community program that brings together residents from throughout the valley around the Maltese Falcon by Dashiell Hammett. The first one-third of the podcast was aired last week on Voices in the Valley, and you can find it at voicesinthevalley.us. We hope you enjoy part two of the NEA podcast.
Book critic and NEA director of literature, David Kippen.
Hammett was born in 1894 in pretty rural Maryland on his grandfather's farm. Spent a lot of his youth in Baltimore. His father was kind of a ne'er-do-well, and so Hammett himself left school after just, I think, a year of high school and picked up odd jobs. He was a messenger boy for the Baltimore and Ohio Railroad. But nothing really clicked until he found the Pinkertons.
Julie Rivette.
My grandfather responded to an ad and took a job with Pinkerton's detective agency. It was the kind of job that was really well-suited to his intellectual curiosity. He wasn't one to sit behind a desk and do the same thing day after day. Pinkerton's allowed him to go out in the world and experience things that he'd never experienced before. He got to meet all kinds of people, crooks and cops and all kinds of characters. So that kind of work helped him build his repertoire as a detective and as a writer.
Diane Johnson.
Hammett learned a lot from the Pinkerton Operatives Manual, which he quotes from in some of his early works. He learned a lot about detection and the sort of rough side of law enforcement and struggle.
Joe Gores.
Hammett had been a private eye. He knew what it was like to stand there and say, am I going to die? This guy that's shooting at me. You know, I've been shot at a few times, and you always think, Jesus, oh God, you know, you're scared stiff. And he's been there. And very few writers have been there.
Hammett joined the army during World War I, though serious health problems resulted in an honorable discharge after only 4 months. He moved west, signing up again with the Pinkertons, and finally settled in San Francisco. Hammett suffered from tuberculosis and other respiratory illnesses his entire life, but there was one positive consequence of his poor health. He became an avid reader. He would often joke about trying to read every book in the San Francisco Public Library. Scholar Matthew Broccoli.
Apparently, the seed, the germ, was reading about the Crusades and the Knights of Malta, and the novel grew out of that.
Adrian McKinty discusses the origins of the coveted falcon.
The Knights of Malta made a fortune guarding shipping going through the Mediterranean and through piracy. And because they were granted the island of Malta by the Spanish crown, they decided to give a gift every year to the Spanish crown of this beautifully jewel-encrusted falcon as a token of their gratitude. Unfortunately, the falcon goes missing in the Middle Ages, and then supposedly the falcon turns up in Constantinople in the 1920s. And so there's a lot of art dealers and other ne'er-do-wells are looking for this Maltese falcon. Bridget O'Shaughnessy and the people who are with her think that the falcon has ended up in San Francisco.
Walter Mosley.
Bridget O'Shaughnessy is the classic femme fatale. She knows how to use her beauty and her guile to get men to do what she wants them to do. And every man who falls into that web dies. She represents not evil, but danger.
Sam Spade might be falling for the red-haired bombshell Bridget, but from the start he doesn't entirely trust her. He learns about the missing falcon from Joel Cairo. Soon after, Spade pays Bridget a visit.
The eagerness with which Bridget O'Shaughnessy welcomed Spade suggested that she had been not entirely certain of his coming. "Well, what did he say?" she asked with half-playful petulance. "He offered me $5,000 for the Black Bird." She started, her teeth toward the end of her cigarette, and her eyes, after a swift, alarmed glance at Spade, turned away from him. "What did you say?" $5,000 is a lot of money. "But, Mr. Spade, you promised to help me." Her hands were on his arm. "I trusted you. You can't..." She broke off, took her hands from his sleeve, and worked them together. Spade smiled gently into her troubled eyes. "Don't let's try to figure out how much you've trusted me," he said. "I promised to help you, sure, but you didn't say anything about any black birds." "But you must have known, or you wouldn't have mentioned it to me. You do know now. You can't treat me like that." Her eyes were cobalt blue prayers. She lifted her shoulders and hands and let them fall in a gesture that accepted defeat. "It is far more than I could ever offer you if I must bid for your loyalty." Spade laughed. His laughter was brief and somewhat bitter. "That is good," he said, "coming from you. What have you given me besides money? Have you given me any of your confidence, any of the truth, any help in helping you? Haven't you tried to buy my loyalty with money and nothing else? Well, if I'm peddling it, why shouldn't I let it go to the highest bidder? I've given you all the money I have." Tears glistened in her white-ringed eyes. Her voice was hoarse, vibrant. "I've thrown myself on your mercy, told you that without your help I'm utterly lost. What else is there?" She suddenly moved close to him and cried angrily, "Can I buy you with my body?" Their faces were a few inches apart. Spade took her face between his hands and he kissed her mouth roughly and contemptuously. Then he sat back and said, "I'll think it over."
The NEA Big Read audio guides are licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives 4.0 International License. NEA Big Read is a program of the National Endowment for the Arts in partnership with Arts Midwest.
Thanks so much for joining us here today on Voices in the Valley. Listen in every Saturday morning at 10 on KLBB 1220 AM. Find us online at www.voicesinthevalley.us and subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Next week on Voices in the Valley, we are joined by Larry Newman from the St. Croix Jazz Orchestra. You won't want to miss Episode 3 of Shush. Don't cry over missing robots. So make sure to tune in.